Yes, because He is, we are. Everything that we have, everything we have been given, all that we experience in life is because of the awesome love that God has for us. Today, we're going to conclude a study we started a few weeks ago about the stewardship of life. Today, we're going to tackle that probably the most uncomfortable part of when we think about stewardship. We're going to talk about the treasures and the monies that we have and that we are supposed to use and give as God directs us to do so. I will say this starting out. This is a giving church. You are a giving people. So much so that we approved a budget back in January, or actually we approved it back in November, but it began in January for our congregation of about $384,000 for this year. Last year we gave right around $35,000 through the cooperative program means, and that was we actually gave a little more than the 9% that we set that we were going to give, so we actually exceeded that 9% goal by a little bit. We gave almost $8,000 to our association. And if you've noticed in the bulletin, I don't know if you've seen this or not or paid close attention, we are quite a bit ahead of budget for this year, not even 3 months into the year. Now, we'll tell you with that surplus, you see that we've had some gifts that have come in that are supposed to last through the year, so there will be a kind of a correction of sorts to the market going up. You know, there's always a correction, so there will be a little bit of correction through the year through that. But again, this is, again, a very giving church, and I want to say thank you to you. Again, it speaks very well about how God works in us and how much we want to see God to work in and through us in life. Now, knowing all of this, and knowing who I'm speaking to, sometimes you may think, okay, why are we talking about giving if we're doing this well? And we've got it kind of, it seems like things are going okay. Well, there are still some things periodically we need to remind ourselves of. And in that part of reminding ourselves of some things about what God teaches us about giving and being a good steward, it encourages us, or hopefully it should encourage us, that yes, I am doing, I'm being obedient, and God is blessing, and God is being able to do this and this and that because I am being obedient to God. But at the same token, we also can be challenged as well, hearing from God through being reminded of some things. And there are some challenges that we face as well. We are, back in January, early February, we started a capital improvements process to look at our facilities of updating and taking care of repairing some areas, and as we mentioned, starting Camp Courageous, renovating our children's area, and hopefully again that's going to be going up and running in about another month or so. So there's some current things that are going on that's going to challenge us a bit as a congregation. We've had one of the major units, there's four big units out in the Family Life Center. One of those has went down, and it's about time. They're 20 plus years old, so we're starting to see those things. So it's time to replace those. We've got one that's getting replaced here soon in the next week or so. We've got another that's going to have some need some attention as well. So again, we've got some challenges, some repairs that need to be done, some updating, some things that need to be done. So it's there. So let's remind ourselves of a few things here. Jesus actually had quite a bit to say about money. Now, we're not obviously going to look at all those things that Jesus had to say. We're going to touch on a few things that Jesus had to say and some of those lessons this morning. I'm going to launch us from Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 is part of the Sermon on the Mount. It's a section that Jesus gives us some good words about this. And again, we're just going to launch this. We're going to spend a greater time in the book of James. But in Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 19, we find these words from Jesus. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on the earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where the thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in the heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where the thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so if your eye is healthy, then your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And if the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for he will either hate one and will love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So Jesus speaks here about treasures and how we handle them. And things that that we have, the possessions we have, as well as the monies that we have. And he points out some pretty good things through these. One of them that hits us big, and it's probably the most obvious of the statements that he makes, is that the treasures of life reveal our heart. The treasures that we have in life reveal our heart, reveals where we are, reveals our attention, our focus, and our love. And we can say we treasure this and we treasure that, and we can talk about all the things that are important to us, but it's how we treat those things. That's what reveals what's really important to us. And what do I do with those things that I say that are important to us or important to me? Now, when it comes to money, there's this old saying that money talks. Well, if money talks, what's it saying? So if our money is talking to us and we're talking about our treasures in life, what's it saying about my life? What's it saying about how I live and how I put life together? And then the second thing that Jesus says, and he says this toward the end here that we can pull out, that treasures are not taken, they are given and received. Treasures of life, we don't take those things. They're given to us, and they are received by us. It's not so much then what I'm earning as much as what God has given to me. See, and here's the thing. If I don't see everything that I have as something that God has given me, then why do I need to be a steward of it? Because stewardship means that I'm managing. And if it's part of my service to Him, and it's not something that I have gained, that I have gotten, that I've went out and this is mine and it's for me, see, that again, that changes my perspective of being a steward. If I'm serving God, then it's what God has given me. And I'm going to serve Him, and I'm going to use these treasures that He has given me for His purpose and His will. And those things then works about how I get them, how I guard them or how I save them, how I spend it, how I hang on to it, you know, how I give it away. For a better understanding of this, and this is where we're going to go to the book of James. So find in the Bible is the book of James, James chapter 5, and we're going to begin reading in verse 1. James chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, if you're using the Pew Bible, it's on page 179 in the second part of that Bible, or in the second part of that book. It begins to renumber again with Matthew. So James chapter 5, verse 1, if you're using the Pew Bible, it's page 179. Just remind us a few things here. James was the brother of Jesus. James was also the pastor of the first church in Jerusalem. Actually, it was the only church at the time. The early church got started, and James eventually became the pastor there. Like any church, they have their issues, right? This church that James is pastoring by this juncture, it's got some issues too. It had some on the outside and some on the inside. On the outside, the Romans were persecuting Christians, and so therefore they were persecuting the church. Jewish leaders were still bringing persecution to the Christians, to believers. So on the outside, they were having some pressures brought in on them. They were being persecuted. They also had this famine that had hit Jerusalem area as well. And Paul, if you remember, he went around to several churches that he had planted and was receiving funds, and he took those funds back to Jerusalem to help with the famine relief. Now, James, as we're reading, he's going to hit upon one of the other issues that this church had. And I'll grant you, when we read through this passage, you're going to think like a lot of us do that, he's talking to a particular group of people. I'm not so sure he's talking to a particular group of people as much as he's talking to all of us, right? And you'll see what I mean, and we'll flesh this out here in just a little bit. So James chapter 5, pick up in verse 1. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotten, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasures in these last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence, and you have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person, and he does not resist you. So again, you read through this, and you might think, all right, he's only talking about rich people. Well, I'm not so sure that applies here. It may apply in certain regards, because here's something we need to know background-wise. Nowhere will you find in the Scriptures, You won't find it, obviously, in the words that James has written here, and you're not going to find it in the words that Jesus taught either, where he condemns wealth. It just doesn't happen. It's just not there. Moses, in fact, told Israel that because they were following God, that God would give them the opportunity to make wealth in some regard. So the sin is not in having the wealth or acquiring the wealth. You might say it's more how you acquire it. We all have wealth of some degree or another. Whether you may not think you do, you do. Case in point. You could read the same passage to a third world country people who are living in this country are living on less than $2 a day. Can you imagine trying to do that? Live on less than $2 a day. So you read this to them, and they may be thinking about people in our country who have a modest lifestyle that we consider modest style, even a lifestyle that might be struggling a bit because they're living on minimum wage. But to someone who's living on less than $2 a day, that's a lot of money, and they're wealthy and they're rich. Consequently, you might read it again into our country or into another developed country, and you think of the people who are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year or $1 million a year, and you're thinking they're wealthy. So in some sense, wealth is relative here. These words apply to all the above. So James isn't talking about or against wealth, but he turns his attention to those three things we mentioned a few moments ago. First of all, how do we get our wealth? This is what he talks about. Go back to verse 1 again. It says, "Come now, you rich, and weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you." Notice again, if you go into verse 4 as well, it says, "Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you have kept back by fraud, are crying out against you, and then cries of the harvest have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." So again, this is how they have acquired this wealth. Should they read through this? This just kind of catches me, is that how they weep and howl. What kind of imagery that creates in your mind? Weep and howl because of the miseries that's coming upon you. And in some cases, you're experiencing these miseries now, but there's some that's even coming that's going to be even more than that. And this misery is overwhelming hardship. It's about a suffering. So this misery that's coming is going to create the means of weeping and howling. And again, what kind of imagery does that create in your mind? I mean, we know people who have very little and they're miserable. We know people who have a lot, and they're miserable. So, you know, it's relative in some sense. But again, this imagery comes to our mind. Jesus, he told this parable. He told this parable about two people. He only named one of them. You had this rich guy that had this elaborate estate, and then you had this poor guy that we would call dirt poor, Lazarus. And he lived outside. He was homeless. He lived outside close to the gates of this guy's house. The rich guy, he had everything he could want and need in life. Lazarus has said that he had so little that even the sores that he would have on his body when he got sick, the dogs would come and lick on him. So it's like the dogs had more compassion for Lazarus than the people around him. It also tells us that, and Jesus tells us that story, that Lazarus would eat the crumbs, the scraps that the rich guy threw out. And they won't. So Lazarus would get those and eat them. And that's how he survived. Both men die. One goes to heaven, one goes to hell. Jesus says it was a rich guy that went to hell, and Lazarus went into heaven. Now, it wasn't because of the money. It wasn't because of who had what. It was about their lifestyle. Because the rich man, and get this, the rich man, he says, he sees up into heaven, he says, "Lord, have Lazarus." So he knew Lazarus. And he knew Lazarus had been sitting at his gate all those years and did nothing. And so he says, "Send Lazarus and let him give me just a drop of water, and that would bring relief to some of this torment just for a split second." So that kind of gives you the idea how tormented this guy was. Just a drop of water, just a split second would ease the suffering. And James says, weep and howl because of the suffering that's coming, because you're depending upon your life and how you're gaining this wealth. It's going to bring crisis and misery to you. So much so, and that's what we find in verse 4. It says, you're holding it back. You're getting it dishonestly. You're frauding, he says. You're frauding your workers. The boss is frauding his workers. They put in a hard day's work, and you take more out than you're supposed to. And he says, that's frauding. And we would cry out about that today. You'd see all kinds of lawsuits today about this. But, you know, about an employer abusing his employees. But you know, the reverse is also true, is it not? For the employee to say that they come in late, take extra long time at lunchtime, and leaves and goes home early, but yet at the end of the week sign that they worked all the hours they were supposed to that week and turned it in, they're frauding the employer. They're gaining their funds and their resources fraudulently. So both are wrong. See, there are employers who were misrepresenting or were taking advantage of their employees, and then there's employees who take advantage of their employers. Both are gaining their wealth wrongly, and both are going to end up weeping and howling in great misery because they have gained their funds wrongly. So the wealth we have isn't the amount that's important, it's how you get it that's important. Now go back to the verse 1 again. Come, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you, and you will eat your flesh like fire. Ooh, that's an image too. And you laid upon your treasures in these last days. So now we've went from how you get it to now how you're guarding it, or how you're saving it, or how you're hoarding it. And notice it's guarded. It's stockpiled. James may have been rereading or retelling a lesson that Jesus told, because it was the same passage we read from Matthew 6. He said, you know, you collect all these things that the moths are going to eat, the bugs are going to eat, and the rust and so forth, and the people are coming in and steal. You could almost see this, that wealth in this day and time that James and Jesus was living was measured by one of three things, or all three things. How much food you had. How much you had in your pantry. Was it full? Was your freezer full? Did you have, you know, the overflowing? And you forgot that it was there, that you didn't use it, and it began to rot, and it didn't do any good for you and your family. It didn't do any good to anyone else. It just rotted away and became bad. Clothes. Closets full of clothes. Can't wear them all. And the moths and the bugs begin to eat them because you're not getting them out and using them. Gold and the silver, the alloys that they made the monies, would corrode and rust over. And when it's rusted and it's gone, you can't spend it. So what good did it do you? You know, you think through these things, and it's kind of like, as much as things change, they stay the same. You know, does your wealth use you, or do you use your wealth? I mean, for some of us, our wealth owns us. And again, it doesn't matter how big your bank account or how little your bank account is. It owns us because we hoard things and we collect things. That's what hoarding means. It means we collect it. But why are we collecting these things? Why do we collect and fill our homes up and fill our attics up with things? So we can say we have it? I forgot I had that. When you start going through things. You know, we even rent storage vaults. Climate-controlled storage vaults. To put our stuff in. We hide it, and all it does is collect the dust and the bugs. And then we say that so we can have it. But we don't know what we have in many cases. We spend large sums of monies on things to acquire things that we forget we have and we hide away. What was it somebody said, that yesterday's must-have is tomorrow's yard sale item? That's kind of changed today. Yesterday's must-have is tomorrow's place I have to find a place in my attic or in the storage bin for. Jesus told a parable kind of like this too. He said this guy had a bumper crop one year. I mean, all kinds of product came in. And instead of selling it off or giving some to the poor, he said, let's tear down these barns and be bigger barns so we can put more stuff in it and bring it all in and put it in these new barns. You know what happened at the end of the story? The guy died the next day. He never enjoyed all that stuff. It went to no avail. You see, I guess you could say our money does speak. And money does have a lot to say about us. How we use it, or how we get it, and how we try to hang on to it. Notice verse 5. We pick up this last thought here. It says, you lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence, and you have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. This has to do with how we give it. How we give the wealth that we've been given. Do we give it back to God? Do we allow God to use it? Or again, am I hoarding it? And how do I spend it? Am I spending it all on myself? Does the wealth that I have, and again, it doesn't matter, again, how big our bank account is, what I have, am I using it to help the kingdom of God, or am I and see it as God's money, or is it only for me and my self-indulgence, my wanton pleasures and the pursuit of pleasures? Growing up, I watched a cartoon and even read in the comic strips, Scrooge McDuck. Anybody remember Scrooge McDuck? He had his big vaults of money, and he's going in and swimming at a time. That's really the kind of idea here. Is that we're not going to give any away because we got to keep it for ourselves. Again, has little to do with what we have as much as what we're doing with what we have. Notice what he says. He says they are fattening themselves up. They're fattening themselves up just like the cow and the pig. And they're taking life easy. It's all self-indulgement. But why are they fattening up the cow and the pig? So it can become hamburger and bacon. And James says, this is what's happening. You're fattening yourselves up for the day of slaughter. Jesus had something to say about this as well. In Luke chapter 6, he says, give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Wow. That's a great imagery. You've seen this happen. You get a bag of stuff and you put things in it. You push it down, you put more, push it down, until you can't fit any more in it. So Jesus says, as you give that way where you're giving and pushing and so you can give more and more away. And so it's the same measure, the same mindset you have in your giving will be how God gives to you. Now, God may not give you monetarily, but the blessings that God gives to you will be so freely or so flowing in your life because he'll be pressing it down. You know, there's basically three types of givers. And every church has one of these givers, in them, at least one of these givers. Maybe oftentimes several givers are like these. There's the non-participate giver. You know, this is a person that doesn't see how they could possibly give. I don't have enough, or I can't give. I don't have this, I don't have that, so I just can't give. And so they just can't see it, so they just don't participate. Now, it could be why today that the average giver today in the life of the church gives 3%, less than 3% to the church. And again, I know who I'm here. I'd say most of us here give well beyond the 3% because, again, this is a very giving church. But, again, we do have some non-participants in this. Then there's the Pharisee, or what I call the Pharisaical giver. You know what the Pharisaical giver is. They give to the letter of the law, no more, no less. This is what God's required, so this is what all I'm giving. And if we do give more, it's giving out of a sense of obligation because I have to do this. It's not something that I want to do to show my love for God. It's because I have to do this, and God has required me to do this. And that's Pharisaical giving, because they're going to give to the letter of the law, and that's it. But then we have the cheerful giver, and Paul talks about the cheerful giver in Corinthians, where we give because we let God set the standard of my giving. God, you're the one that controls what I give and what I don't give. God, I give because I love you. God, I give because I want your kingdom to grow. God, I give because everything I have is yours, and that's the heart of a cheerful giver. And again, it doesn't matter if it's a small amount or a large amount. It's what God asks us to give. And we do it with a grateful heart and a sincere heart. I like the words of our current Southern Baptist president, J.D. Greer, who's a pastor in North Carolina. He says, if spenders are thinking about today, savers are thinking about tomorrow, then stewards are thinking about eternity. Because stewards, again, see that God has everything. It's all His. I'm here to manage it for Him. You know that old saying, money talks? Maybe it does talk. And it has a lot to say. And again, it's not so much of what we have or what we don't have, but how we've gotten it. How we hoard it, or how we give it. And much like what Jesus said, what you treasure is where the focus of your heart is. So I guess you could say, it really all comes down to who has your heart. Does God have our heart through Jesus? Or is it the things and the stuff, the world have a heart? Who has your heart? What are the things you treasure? I hope it's God through Jesus, because that's where we live the blessed life. And if it's not, if God doesn't have your heart, today I invite you to let God have your heart. Because of the love that He has shown to us through His Son Jesus and the sacrifice on the cross and through the power of the resurrection that we'll celebrate in another month, He overcomes sin in our life, gives us life. And then we can see everything that we have is truly a blessing from God because it is God's gift to us. Or maybe it's, again, in realizing once again that all I have really is God's, and He has given me a God-given purpose of living. And that the time that God has given me on the earth that is to be used for His glory and His power. And then the things and the possessions I have are God's and are to be used so that God again receives glory and honor. And I'm to manage all those things and be a good steward. So who has your heart? Let's pray together. God, we thank You for loving us. God, I thank You for all that You do give us. I remember words from years and years ago, you can't outgive God. And You certainly can't outgive You, God, because You just do so much in our lives. God, I may pray and ask that You help us to get over the things that we think we have or the things we don't think we have when we manage and we focus on those things so much, and that we would get our minds off of those things and get our mind and our heart tuned to You. So much so that we can see, God, that everything we really have is a gift and a blessing from You. And God, I pray that way because I truly believe that once we realize that, then giving is not a problem. Managing and being a good steward of what we have is not a problem, because all we have is Yours and we want to honor You with our whole life. So God, I pray. God, I pray for each of us here. God, I pray for each that, as we're listening, God, I pray that You'd have our heart. God, again, that You'd help us to see that all we have is Yours. And again, God, You're such a blessing to us. Such hope and life. And God, then let us open up to see how You want us to spend our life for You in purpose, in time, in treasures. So again, God, You might receive glory. So God, bring us to You. If it's in the means of starting a walk and a relationship with You, God, I pray today would be the day. God, if it's reprioritizing some things, that we reprioritize. God, help us to give You all of us, our whole heart. And I pray this in Jesus' name. And amen. Let's stand together. You come as God calls you.